Well, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on where you are. Welcome to the weekly product support call with Christian Drapeau. Christian is the chief scientist of StemTech Health Sciences and also the co-inventor of StemEnhance. And on these product support calls, Christian is addressing a certain topic of the StemEnhance and stem cells in general. Without further ado, Christian, what is the topic for today?
Well, I thought that what would be interesting to talk about today is the difference between embryonic and adult stem cells given the veto by Bush, by the president, on stem cell research or embryonic stem cell research, probably give a little bit of a bigger understanding of what is the difference between embryonic and adult stem cells. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. So first, let's go into the broad definitions of what they are, and then we'll go into a little bit of the more details of how different they are, and also why do we hear about all of that kind of controversies, what we see in the media right now. So embryonic stem cells, as the name implies, comes from an embryo. To be more specific, it comes from an 8-day-old embryo, and which is just a little lump of cells, and there's about a number of about 32 cells making this young embryo, and any one of these cells can be taken, and it's very easy to make them duplicate. In a nutshell, the difference between a stem cell and all the other cells, which we can refer to as somatic cells or cells of a specific tissue or a specific kind, let's say a brain cell or a skin cell or a liver cell, is that any cell like this in the body have their own function. For example, a brain cell is going to fire electrical impulses, release neurotransmitters, respond to neurotransmitters, is going to have its nervous function, but that's all that it will do. And it can never become a cell of another tissue. If you put a nerve cell in the skin, it will remain a nerve cell in the skin, and if anything, it will die. So that's a somatic cell. It is a cell that has reached its end point in its ability to both duplicate and differentiate, meaning to become cells of another type. At the other end, we have stem cells. Stem cells, what really defines them is their ability to multiply. In the bone marrow, it is to multiply endlessly. In a tissue, it is to multiply to a certain extent, not endlessly, but to a large extent, a good capacity to multiply and also to become cells of other tissues. If we take a stem cell and put it in the skin, it becomes a skin cell. If we take a stem cell, put it in the liver, it becomes a liver cell. In the brain, a brain cell, and so on and so forth. So it has this ability here to multiply endlessly. So what is the difference between embryonic and adult stem cells? Like I was saying just before, embryonic stem cells are extracted from an embryo. What is specific about embryonic stem cells, and that's how they were sort of discovered and described early on in this old field of stem cell research, is that if you take an embryonic stem cell and you inject it, first let's just mention that stem cells per se have been known for probably something like 20, 30 years, much longer in terms of, let's just state that in our ability to really identify them and really describe what they are, it is a relatively young science. The way that the place where we can extract stem cells most easily is from the embryo, because we all know, even not knowing much about medicine, we all know that a human being comes from two cells that meet, get together, and so these two cells that merge, that makes one cell, that one cell is going to become a living organism. So it's obvious that that one cell has the ability of becoming anything in the body. So just from that angle, we know that embryonic stem cells have this great potential. So that's why the focus has been there from the origin. Adult stem cells, in terms of the discovery of their capacity, is sort of an evolution of this whole process. So that's why the focus was originally on embryonic stem cells, and the focus remained there historically because of the properties of these embryonic stem cells. So first, how they were studied is they would take an embryonic stem cell and inject it in the skin. And when the embryonic stem cell is injected in the skin, it develops into what is called a teratoma. A teratoma is a sort of mass of cells or mass of bits and parts of tissue. So you will end up like this under the skin with a lump that will be made of a few hairs, a few teeth, a little piece of, that looks like a heart because it's beating, a little piece that looks like a brain, a little piece that looks like a bone, basically pieces like this of what normally would be an organism. But obviously it's completely disorganized. It's just a lump. But because it was a demonstration that one embryonic stem cell has that ability like this of becoming any tissue, and it became, I'm kind of simplifying it here, but I'm picking up the elements that are going to really show the best, the difference between embryonic and adult stem cells. This kind of test, among with other tests, but this one, among others, became the way to define an embryonic stem cell. If according to this stringent definition of an embryonic stem cell, if you have a cell that you extracted from an embryo and you want to know if it is a stem cell, you grow it in a test tube, then you take one of them, you inject it under the skin, it gives you a teratoma along with some other tests, and you know that what you have there in your test tube are stem cells, embryonic stem cells. So that's how the whole field evolved. Along this evolution, we started to identify other cells coming from a living organism, and they were called adult stem cells, which means cells after birth. So even in an infant, we refer to these stem cells as adult stem cells. They are mostly in the bone marrow. If we take an adult stem cell and we put it under the skin, nothing happens. We know today that all that happens is that it becomes a skin cell. But other than that, there's no teratoma. There's none of those very specific characteristics of embryonic stem cells. Therefore, the conclusion was that adult stem cells really do not have the same ability as embryonic stem cells. So this view of the limitation of adult stem cells sort of carried on over the years, and sort of historically speaking, when scientists look at adult stem cells, the conception is that they're not really as flexible, and they do not offer as much promises as embryonic stem cells. But if we really look at it carefully, in a way, one would think that if I inject an embryonic stem cell and it becomes a teratoma, or this lump of completely disorganized tissues or bits of tissues, that's not really what I would like to have when I'm talking about a therapeutic or a health approach using stem cells. What I would like to have is a cell that, when I put it in a tissue, it becomes cells of that tissue. And that's what adult stem cells are doing. But when you do it that way, consider again the historical development of this whole field right now. When you look at an adult stem cell, until you can really track it, when you put it in a tissue and it becomes a cell of that tissue, once it's become a cell of the skin, for example, you cannot differentiate it from the other cells. So you don't even know if it died, went somewhere else, or if it is a skin cell. So for a long time, adult stem cells were really kind of boring to study, and their fate in the body like this was invisible. So it's only over the past few years that with the development of certain tools, one of them being a fluorescent protein, and then the gene that encodes for that fluorescent protein, it's called a green fluorescent protein, and the gene that encodes for it, if we take that gene and put it in the nucleus of a cell, then the cell is going to produce that protein over and over again. And so will be then fluorescent, green and fluorescent. And if that cell divides and becomes any other cell, the cell in which the cell that it becomes will also be green and fluorescent. And that's the whole key of the process here. If I take a fluorescent adult stem cell and I put it in the skin, suddenly I see that I have a fluorescent skin cell. And that is undeniable. You know that it was the skin cell that became the skin cell. When that kind of work suddenly started to happen, then the results were just nothing but mind-blowing. We just discovered that adult stem cells really not only have the same ability as embryonic stem cells in many ways, meaning their ability to become cells of various tissues, but they do so in such an organized manner. You put it in the skin, it does not become a bone or hair or tooth or anything like this. It becomes skin. If you put it in the liver, it becomes a liver cell. Put it in the brain, it becomes a brain cell. And also, embryonic stem cells have been shown to become tumors. There's a lot of data and a lot of concern expressed in the field about the possibility of stem cells becoming cancerous cells. But really, all of this is coming out from the embryonic field. It is not seen when we're using adult stem cells. So not only do they do the same thing, but they do their work like this in tissues without any of the side effects or any of the concerns that we see with embryonic stem cells. The reason why they're not talked about so much in the media is kind of a combination of many things. And I don't want to hear to talk and making scientists in general look somewhat not smart enough, let's put it that way, because science is a big system, and like anything else, it's tied to its economics, it's tied to its institutions, it's tied into many, many things like this. So when someone wants to do research, it needs to get funded. In order to get funded, you need to have a good reason that your research is really valuable. So when you work in a field where adult stem cells are considered to be not as promising as embryonic stem cells, right there it makes it for a much more difficult field to develop until a few brave ones sort of put the idea out, do the research, and start to show that adult stem cells are really, have really the kind of capacities that I'm talking about. When that becomes established, then slowly funding is released and the work really develops. So that's what we are seeing today. This is a very, very young field, adult stem cell research. So what we're seeing right now is in this emerging field, what we see is that the data is out there. If you go in the scientific literature, you will find a lot of information about adult stem cells. But we're still at that place where, from an economic standpoint, from a society standpoint, the expert that we refer to are not those recent experts. They're those that have been working in the field for many years, and those that have been working in the field for many years have been working for embryonic stem cells. So when we go to these experts, that's the language that we hear. When we go where the money has been put, it is an embryonic stem cell. This is where we see everything. So just to give you an overview here of what is the difference between adult and embryonic stem cell, there is an article published, it was actually a testimonial for the FDA, that Dr. Prentice, a professor at Georgetown University, wrote a few years ago, where in his conclusion was concluding that probably the best, most efficient, and safe way of using stem cell is to simply support your own release of stem cells in your own body. So, which is what we're talking about, but I'm mentioning here, I'm quoting Dr. Prentice, not that he's supporting our product, we did not have those kinds of discussions, but just to say that slowly the scientific field is emerging in that direction, is going in that direction, recognizing that probably the easiest way of using stem cells and tapping in their potential is to just release them from the body and then let them do their job in the body, because they have shown to be able to migrate like this in the body wherever they need to go. So that's, in a nutshell, the difference between the two. And obviously the other reason why you're hearing a lot about embryonic stem cells versus adult stem cells is just the very nature of the media society in which we live in. You hear about things that are linked with controversies or linked into money or linked into some significant political interest, and we have all of this with embryonic stem cells. We have limited funding, significant funding, but limited in terms of going to a few labs, so there's a lot of competition there with a lot of potential income derived from this, so it's newsworthy. There's also the religious or ethical issue around using human embryos, which obviously is the main one that we hear in the news, which again obviously is extremely newsworthy, and that's the main reason why we hear about this in the news. Adult stem cells at this point in time bypass the use of adult stem cells, bypasses all those issues, so one would think that they are really the answer to the problem, and they are, but so far that has not shown up as being as interesting as the controversy itself. So give it just probably a year or two, and I do think that the data, everything that I'm talking about here pertaining to adult stem cells, is going to be really the main focus of what is going to be talked about in the media. So that's what I wanted to share, Marijke, unless you think of something else to say about the topic.
No, thank you very much. That's a very timely topic, and I believe that people can look up this letter from Dr. Prentice online on the StemTech Health website, third-party information. Is that correct?
If it is not on that one, it is on the stem cell info or stemcellscience.info, which is the website where we put a lot of the third-party information has been put. There's the article by Dr. Prentice, and there's a few other articles that have been written recently also discussing this very topic here that I'm talking about, the difference between embryonic and adult stem cells. If they're not already posted, they will be posted soon.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have gotten some questions from the field that were emailed to products@stemtechhealth.com, and I want to remind everybody, if you have any questions, please email them to productsupport@stemtechhealth.com, and Christian will answer these questions on this call. So the first question is, can you talk about what really makes Stem Enhance distinct and more effective than other blue-green algae or AFA supplements?
Okay. Yeah, we've talked about it a few times. Let me try to summarize it in just a few words, or at least not too long of an answer. In AFA, or let's first talk about, when we talk about other blue-green algae, let's just talk about spirulina, for example. Spirulina, because there's really essentially two blue-green algae on the marketplace, spirulina and Aphanizomenon flosaqua, or AFA, one that is the raw ingredient for Stem Enhance. Spirulina contains phycocyanin, the blue pigment, which is anti-inflammatory, contains some polysaccharides that stimulates or support the immune system, but does not contain the ingredient or the element responsible for an effect on stem cells. We have tested spirulina, and we have not seen this effect, and we also tested for its content in PEA, and it does not contain PEA, the molecule that is responsible for the effect on concentration or the mind. So let's put spirulina aside. Spirulina is definitely something good. It is not something that is, it's a good dietary supplement, but when we talk about an effect on stem cells, it just does not do it. When we compare Stem Enhance to AFA, what we have done over the years, people have been consuming AFA, and the main benefits that have been reported are this anti-inflammatory, the anti-inflammatory properties. We're having this support of immune function, this increase or support of mental clarity, sort of mental energy, and we have now described the effect on stem cell, the support in terms of stem cell release. The active components responsible for these various effects have been identified. The blue pigment for the anti-inflammatory, antioxidant properties, we're having the polysaccharide for support of immune function, we're having phenylethylamine or PEA for the effect on the brain, and an L-selectin ligand for an effect on the release of stem cells and on inflammation. So these have been identified. So what we do when we do Stem Enhance is that we concentrate those different compounds. We don't isolate these compounds, we concentrate them, a little bit like one would do carrot juice compared to a carrot, where you can in one glass have the nutritional properties of probably, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 carats. It is a little bit the same thing with Stem Enhance. We concentrate AFA, and by concentrating it, we end up with a concentration of 5 to 1 in the different components that we're looking for. So when you consume 1 gram of Stem Enhance, it is somewhat the equivalent of the 5 grams of AFA. So in that regard, the cost, just from that perspective, the cost of 1 gram of Stem Enhance is much less than 1 gram, than the 5 grams of AFA. So from a cost standpoint, we're already better off with Stem Enhance if what we want is just to get concentrated, a concentrated source of these components. But where it goes a little bit further is just from, and this is empirical observations, what people have reported over the years in terms of benefit with AFA, which at times would take several months, 5, 6, 7, 8 months to show up. People are reporting this much, much faster with Stem Enhance. And not only faster, the result seems to be greater, and also the proportion of the people reporting those kinds of results is much greater. So in this, I cannot explain exactly why or how it's happening. Is it the concentration process that makes some of them more bioavailable? It is still a question mark, but empirically what we have observed is that when people take Stem Enhance, the effect is better. If they take 1 gram of Stem Enhance, the effect is greater than if they were to take 5 grams of AFA. But AFA is the natural component from which we make stemahints. We have made our first observations on AFA, so AFA also works to some extent. But again, our observations over the past few years is making it clear that stemahints gives us better results. So that's the difference between the two.
Okay, thank you. This is a similar question. My product was very hot when I got it in the mail. I do live in Florida. And if that affects its use and effectiveness?
No, the product is extremely sensitive when it is in its liquid form. And that's why we need to chill it and keep it cold. And it needs to be treated in a very, very sensitive way when it is freshly harvested from the lake. Once it is dried, it is a whole different story. The product is relatively stable. We have done those tests where we have mailed product through the UPS truck in the very summer in Texas, and then quantify versus various ingredients in the product, not ingredient but nutrient in the product. And the conclusion is that for the most part, everything stays stable. There is a few ingredients in there or active components that have the potential of degrading, and they're not those that are specifically responsible for the effect that we see on stem cells or the immune system. So we don't lose any effect. And these components, or the component, because it's really one, it's chlorophyll. Chlorophyll in those conditions have the ability to degrade, and it will show up by the product slowly becoming bluer as the green kind of disappears and leaves behind the blue pigment. But it's something that will take, even in hot conditions, it's something that will take several months, if not several years, before we can see it in the powder form, because it's rather stable in the powder form. So there's no problem. The short answer, I'm kind of giving you all the detail here so that you see that it's not just an eye sensor that I'm giving you to reassure you, but to give you that there's data behind this answer. It's not a problem.
Okay, thank you. The last question, can you briefly explain the complication of taking stemahints while on an anticoagulant? What is the physiology and the reason for the warning on the label?
I highly recommend to people to go on the website and to go on the FAQ, the Frequently Asked Questions, FAQ section at the bottom of the website. We have answered there many, many, many questions that come regularly. And so we need to make this probably more clear on the website because a lot of these questions people can get answers. So if you go there, you will have an answer to that question. But in a nutshell, stemahints contains vitamin K. Naturally, it is made by AFA, the raw ingredient from which stemahints is made. So because it contains vitamin K, it is a known thing. Vitamin K is a procoagulant, or at least is an important nutrient or vitamin in the process of coagulation, blood coagulation. So if you are on anticoagulant therapy, doctor is giving you a product that is going to reduce the ability of the blood to coagulate. So if we reduce the ability of the blood to coagulate, it's because your blood has a tendency to coagulate, so we don't want to give it more nutrient that have a pro-coagulant effect. So the doctor will tell you, avoid taking eating vitamin K, or avoid products or food that contains vitamin K. The issue here is to understand that it's a balance. If you have more vitamin K in the blood that may have a tendency to facilitate coagulation of the blood, then we'll increase the medication or the Coumadin or the anticoagulant therapy in order to bring back the blood in a healthy state of coagulation. So it is not so much the amount of vitamin K that you have in your diet as much as the state of the blood that needs to be balanced. So the key issue here is just to maintain always to consume an equal amount of stemahints, so you have an equal amount of vitamin K intake in your diet every day, and then have your blood tested. Most of the time the blood is tested regularly when you are on anticoagulant therapy. Have your blood tested, and if there is any adjustment, the doctor will make it. Now, when I'm saying this, I'm telling you, do not self-medicate. I'm giving you the data behind the whole concept or the information. So all you have to do is mention to your doctor that you've started a dietary supplement that contains vitamin K. They will look at your at the blood and will make any adjustment if needed. Now, oftentimes, there's no adjustment needed because AFA also contains another natural anticoagulant. So very often there's no difference in the actual anticoagulant therapy. Nevertheless, it is not our role here to give medical advice. So we have to simply put on the label that if you are on anticoagulant therapy, just see your doctor. It doesn't. We have changed the wording here on the label. It is not that you cannot take stem enhance. It's just that you need to tell your doctor so that your doctor is aware that you're taking something that is going to contribute to increasing the amount of vitamin K in your diet. So that's the situation.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, Christian, again, for a very informative call, as usual. I want to encourage everybody to check the website often. Often update. We also have finalized a East Coast tour so that everybody can hear Christian live, and as well as Errol Lester, the Vice President of Marketing and Sales. The date that we have for the East Coast is September 8th in Detroit, September 9th Boston, September 10th Manhattan, September 12th Long Island, New York, September 13th Washington, D.C., September 14th, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and September 16th, Orlando, Florida, September 17th, Lafayette, Louisiana, and September 18th, Phoenix, Arizona. So locations and times will be posted on the website as they are finalized. And also tonight there will be an opportunity call, the usually weekly opportunity call, where Christian will give an overview on the Stem Enhance. It's a great place to bring you new guests, people that are new to the product. And also there will be testimonies, there will be a business presentation. And recordings of these calls are available online. They get updated each week with the most recent call. And also on Mondays there is a call with Carol Fitzgerald on the CARE program, which is a fundraising program for nonprofit organizations and other types of organizations. They don't have to be nonprofit. I highly recommend people getting on those calls. Very, very, very informative. And I think that's it. Christian, anything else for you?
No, just adding also that there's a on the 19th we're in Phoenix. On the 20th, there's a day of rest, and on the 21st,
right.
We are back in Hawaii, and then there's a series of lectures in Hawaii. The highlights will be Hilo on the 21st, and there is somewhere near Kona on the 22nd, and we will have Maui somewhere in the middle of that week. All of this needs to be confirmed soon, and then there will also be Honolulu on the weekend after, most likely the Saturday in the afternoon. So this is a little bit further ahead, but it will be again announced on the website, and we'll certainly talk about it on a future call as soon as the exact date and location is confirmed.
All right. Thank you very much, and we'll see everybody next week.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.